It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
President Trump saying he was not briefed about intel that Russia offered bounties to Taliban fighters to kill American troops in Afghanistan. The president tweeting, quote, "Intel just reported to me that they did not find this info credible and therefore did not report it to me or the vice president. Possibly another fabricated Russia hoax, maybe by the fake news at New York Times wanting to make Republicans look bad." The New York Times reporting that the president and National Security Council discussed the Russian bounties in late March. Congress, of course, now demanding more information. Republican Congresswoman Liz Cheney tweeting, "If reporting about Russian bounties on U.S. forces is true, the White House must explain why weren't the president or vice president briefed? Was the info in the PDB? Who did know and when? What has been done in response to protect our forces and hold Putin accountable?" Democrats claiming this goes much deeper.
"We have called for a report to the Congress on this. This is as bad as it gets. I don't know what the Russians have on the president politically, personally, financially, or whatever it is, but he wants to ignore."
Congressman Ted Lieu tweeting, quote, "Dear Richard Grenell, did you really not tell Donald Trump and VP Pence that Russia was paying militants to kill U.S. troops? Or is press secretary lying?" The former acting director of national intelligence fired back saying, "I never heard this, and it's disgusting how you continue to politicize intelligence. You clearly don't understand how raw intel gets verified. Leaks of partial information to reporters from anonymous sources is dangerous because people like you manipulate it for political gain." The AP reporting that the administration is expected to brief select members of Congress later today.
All right, Todd Pirro on Fox and Friends this morning. Of course, that's the latest. And as we're understanding, you probably heard at the top of the news for AFR News, that it looks like another hoax. You know, that it's just relentless. It is relentless, the effort to destroy President Trump. And it's not just about destroying him, could I please say? Yeah, he is the one person standing in the way of destroying the country. That would be a fact. And this is the goal. It is absolutely to destroy and remake and reconstruct and deconstruct this country in every way, to destroy capitalism, to institute the Green New Deal, to abolish the police, to empty the prisons. You know, I was thinking of Venezuela. Remember when they had their, when they finally collapsed, one of the reports that we had, because I did lots of interviews about this, was the incredible crime and murder rates, because this was just what went along with what the left was happy to do, was let criminal factions run in the streets and intimidate people. And if they got killed and whatever else happened, it didn't really matter. And this is a pattern. It's just unbelievable what we see happening. But I want to actually kind of give you some, as much as I can, some good news this morning, because there are some incredible things happening. You know, I told you that the Abraham Lincoln statue, the Emancipation Proclamation statue, was scheduled. The leftists, the Black Lives Matter activists, were, you know, really excited about perhaps tearing that down. And I want to give you just a little bit of background on that statue before I tell you, I think, the really incredible thing that happened when the activists, you know, came after that particular statue. It's the Abraham Lincoln standing with his arm outstretched, and there's a black slave coming up from his knees and looking up like to Lincoln and maybe toward heaven the representation, of course, is that he's freed. But I want to give you some background on this particular statue because I think it's kind of important. I think it's very important. It was erected in 1876. It stands in Lincoln Park in Washington, D.C. It was built with contributions from hundreds of former slaves who wanted to pay tribute to the man who had proclaimed their freedom in 1863. Just after Abraham, this is from the Washington Post, by the way. Just after Lincoln's death, the Western Sanitary Commission, which aided Civil War victims, had received an intriguing request from a former slave who sent the commission $5, her first earnings as a free woman. And trust me, that was a ton of money in 1863. Her first earnings as a free woman to help build a monument to Lincoln. And she called him the best friend the colored people ever had. The commission began a fundraising campaign and invited former slaves to contribute. Famous orator and author Frederick Douglass, and if you don't know about him, you can look him up. He was a black intellectual who actually was in the White House a lot when Lincoln was alive as sort of a consultant on these issues. He spoke at the unveiling of the memorial, and he said, "The sentiment that brings us here today is one of the noblest that can stir and thrill the human heart. It has crowned and made glorious the high places of all civilized nations with the grandest and most enduring works of art designed to illustrate the characters and perpetuate the memories of great public men. It is the sentiment which from year to year adorns with fragrant and beautiful flowers the graves of our loyal, brave, and patriotic soldiers who fell in defense of the Union and liberty. It is the sentiment of gratitude and appreciation which often, in the presence of many who hear me, has filled yonder heights of Arlington with the eloquence of eulogy and the sublime enthusiasm of poetry and song, a sentiment which can never die while the Republic lives. We, the colored people, newly emancipated and rejoicing in our blood-bought freedom, near the close of the first century in the life of this Republic, have now and here unveiled, set apart, and dedicated a monument of enduring granite and bronze in every line, feature, and figure of which the men of this generation may read, and those of after coming generations may read something of the exalted character and great works of Abraham Lincoln, the first martyr president of the United States." I just wanted to read all of that to you to remind you, you know, this after having been enslaved, the black Americans, that's all they had known in this country was enslavement. And so Abraham Lincoln declared them emancipated. And I think it's probably likely, that's one of the reasons he was so hated. Remember his parents, you may or may not know that Abraham Lincoln's parents were actually abolitionists. My husband and I visited his childhood home in Kentucky just a few years ago and saw the Lincoln family Bible and that the fact that they were very active abolitionists. So this was part of his upbringing. It wasn't something newly discovered when he became president of the United States. And if you visit the Lincoln Memorial, if you can still see it, with the graffiti, you can see on the wall his second inaugural address where he talks about slavery and how both sides prayed to God, and yet one was supporting an unjust cause that God could not honor, and that was the practice of slavery. It's just an amazing story. It is part of our history. So here's the amazing thing that happened. There was a gentleman, his name I think is Cedric Turner. I think that's his name. Yeah, Cedric Turner. He says he's a descendant of the black men depicted in that particular statue. And when the activists decided to tear this down after they declared they were going to do it last Thursday night, I told you they said they were going to come at 7 o'clock on Thursday and tear it down. And they were asking the mostly white protesters listening to the Black Lives Matter the guy in charge with the bullhorn by the statue. He was asking them for money. It was just an amazing kind, and they were sort of like, yeah, whatever, man, whatever you ask, whatever you say, of course we'll tear this down. And so it leave it to black citizens of Washington, D.C., who know their history and understand what this statue meant, to stand up and fight back. And I wanted you to hear Cedric speak. He stood up. He's an older man. There were several of them. He wasn't the only one, but I wanted you to hear what he had to say. This is clip 5.
I was going to get between the protesters and that statue if I had the bleed to do so, because I'm doing it for my grandchildren. I have 3 grandchildren, 1 son. I'm doing it not only for them, I'm doing it for the black. I'm trying to maintain our history. I'm trying to maintain our history. I'm trying to build up. Because too much of our history has been destroyed, been redacted. He wants to start from the bottom and go further down. You know, we've already been down long enough. Our history has already been denied to us long enough. That man's history was denied. As soon as I found out 2 years that man is a hero in my family, he has to be destroyed now. And he is not bowing. He is not bowing at all. You see his chin lifted up. It's like mine, like Muhammad Ali. And Muhammad Ali picked up the mantle for him. In fact, everybody in my family picked up the mantle for him.
Can you talk about the story of the statue from your perspective?
Yeah. What is your relation to the statue?
My great-great-great-grandfather. I pray and hope that 200 years from now, that the Black Lives Matter movement won't be treated the same way that movement was treated. Because that was the Black Lives Matter movement. Black Lives Matter movement back in 144 years ago. I've lived. I'm 69 years old and I'll tell you I've lived for the revolution. I've been in jail for the revolution. I write every day for the revolution. I'm coming out with a novel for not trying to publicize about the revolution from the slavery on up to 1936 when there was a public hanging, legalized hanging of a black boy in front of 20,000 white folks who descended upon Orangeburg, Kentucky.
It was just amazing. Let me just also say that Marsha Cole was another person. There were several, but she was very elegant, beautifully dressed with a hat on, and she took the bullhorn and said, you know, basically, I've made a mission to protect this statue. We need light and not hate. And so they didn't tear down the statue. That's all I can say. I just say black citizens of the District of Columbia stood up to try to teach the kids. They went into the history of it, too, just as I just read to you. They talked to them about the history of it, and Marsha talked to them about how important history is. She also pointed out that, our Jewish brothers and sisters have monuments to the Holocaust. We see all of those tragedies, and that's how we learn, is because we know what happened and we need to change. And so it was an amazing thing, and I just wanted to share that with you because it was an amazing thing. Meanwhile, in New York, a young man from the Republican Club, his name is Gavin Wex, said that they were not going to let the Teddy Roosevelt statue, which stands in Central Park West in the museum, be torn down. And this is what he had to say. This is clip 9.
My club, the New York Young Republican Club, will be leading a rally along with activists from across the five boroughs to demonstrate in defense of the equestrian statue of Teddy Roosevelt, which greets millions every year as they enter into the American Museum of Natural History, which is an institution that would not even be there today if not for the great work of our 26th president, who was an American
patriot. You know what?
I'm
going to interrupt him. He says a lot of good things. He talks about the history of Teddy Roosevelt and just the importance of history, and he's very, very eloquent. But there is a pushback, and that is the point of that. Let me just tell you, the Justice Department is stepping up to the plate. Four men have been charged in federal court for attempting to tear down the statue of Andrew Jackson in Lafayette Square. They have actually been coming out. There's information from them. They've made over 100 arrests and charges under the cases of federal law, including inciting riots and destruction of federal property. And also the president issued an executive order that puts federal grants on the chopping block for local governments that don't comply or save or try to save the monuments that are in their particular locales. Let me just say this is what the order says. Earlier this month in Boston, a memorial commemorating an African-American regiment that fought in the Civil War was defaced with graffiti. In Madison, Wisconsin, rioters knocked over the statue of an abolitionist immigrant who fought for the Union during the Civil War. Christian figures are now in the crosshairs, too. Recently, an influential activist for one movement that has been prominent in setting the agenda for demonstrations in recent weeks declared that many existing religious depictions of Jesus and the Holy Family should be purged from our places of worship. It's a very long order, and it says all state and local governments that have failed to protect public monuments, memorials, and statues from destruction or vandalism will not receive funding from federal grants, and orders executive branch agency heads to make sure all federally funded programs are compliant with the order. And there it is. That's where it is on this Monday morning. Something is actually finally being done. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
"80% of the time, an abortion-minded mother who views an ultrasound or sonogram of her baby will choose life. Here's the story of Candace.
The sonogram sealed the deal for me. My baby was like this tiny little spectrum of hope. And I saw his heart beating on the screen. And knowing that there's life growing inside, I mean, that sonogram changed my life. I went from just Candace to mom. Thank you to everybody that has given these gifts. You guys are giving more than money. You guys are giving love.
There are currently preborn centers which do not have an ultrasound machine. Would you sponsor a machine today? Dial pound 250 and say keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Your love can save a life.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Mark Esper, the United States Secretary of Defense. Secretary Esper maintains command and authority over the U.S. military, second only to the President. Deuteronomy 21 reminds us of God's blessings of protection. When you go to war against your enemies and see horses and chariots and an army greater than yours, do not be afraid of them, because the Lord your God, who brought you up out of Egypt, will be with you. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Mark Esper as he leads our nation's military. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
My goal as a teacher is to impart knowledge and then be able then for them to take it and turn it into wisdom. As we teach, I think, okay, 5 years down the road, how will the material that I am teaching them really affect their lives and their careers?
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes. Anarchists have been allowed to sweep across many American cities with hardly any opposition from blue state governors or the White House. Historic St. John's Church in Washington, D.C. set on fire. The Lincoln Memorial defaced with vandalism. Thousands of stores pillaged and plundered. These are not protest, folks. They're riots. It's clear to me our nation is at war, and the enemy is well-funded, well-coordinated, and well-connected. Some say it's George Soros. Others say it's Antifa or Black Lives Matter. And as we saw over the weekend, in many instances, police were told to stand down. Many of our fellow American citizens arming themselves, setting up neighborhood watches, taking personal responsibility for their safety. History teaches us that Rome burned while Nero fiddled. And one day, history might teach us that America burned while our government leaders tweeted. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Driving while black, jogging while black, sleeping while black. We have been criminalized for the very way we show up in the world. Under the harsh gaze of far too many, my black body is seen as a threat, always considered armed. Centuries of institutionalized oppression will not be undone overnight, for racism in America is as structural as the marble pillars of this very institution. With the power of the pen, we must legislate accountability, dismantle these systems, and move in the direction of justice and healing. The Justice and Policing Act is a critical step forward, and I applaud the leadership of the Congressional Black Caucus, but our work is unfinished. There is a rallying cry in communities across the nation. Black Lives Matter is a mandate from the people. It's time. Pay us what you owe us. Our black skin is not a crime. It is the beautiful robe of nation builders. Thank you.
Okay, that's the congressman from Massachusetts, Ayanna Pressley. She's one of the, what do they call them? The squad in the House. We don't know as much about her, but now we know a little bit more, don't we? She shaved her head. She looks very strange, and she's certainly angry and has it in her head that her blackness is a crime. I don't know about you, but that is so bizarre to me. That is just so bizarre, and yet they are whipping, especially young black people, into a frenzy to think that somehow, Certainly, if we were living in 1920 or in the 1800s, there's no question that there was an attitude that somehow blacks were subhuman. There's no question about that. You know, many of us lived long enough that we remember those times. But, you know, I will just think of a video. Since I've been on the air, it's been a few years now since I've been on the air with you. I remember talking to you about a video I saw of some kids. Actually, I was there. What am I talking about? I was there. I'll get it in a second. I just thought of this. So obviously I've not thought it out before I told you, but I was in a museum in Washington, D.C., and sitting outside while my family was inside looking at things. I was sitting outside in the courtyard, and there were all kinds of schools visiting and classrooms, and they were on field trips, and I was watching these kids play with each other in the plaza, and at the tables where they were sitting, they were probably junior high, maybe sixth grade. I guess I saw like white kids with Hispanic kids, with black kids, with Asian kids. They were all laughing, pushing each other, you know, sharing lunch, snacks. And it wasn't just one table. It was all over the place. I didn't really see them like separated into color groups. And I think that that's pretty much been the experience of American children growing up until the Obama administration, when color and blackness and white privilege and all of this began to be the mantra. So I don't know what it's like in public school right now, but I think we were way past that point. I don't know how Ayanna Pressley missed that, except I believe that she's probably Ayanna, based on her background. I don't know if this publicly, but she's certainly a far leftist. And she's right in the thick of all that we are seeing. So Black Lives Matter, seeing on the streets in terms of protests and the push for Black Lives Matter. And I've told you, again, I feel I have to say it because I can't believe how deluded people are. Black Lives Matter, the official group, have co-opted a truth, three-word truth, a three-word phrase that's very true. Black lives do matter. Of course they matter. But the Black Lives Matter group, which is the one that's getting like millions of dollars. Walmart has donated $250 million to Black Lives Matter, is a Marxist international group that wants to abolish the police, empty the prisons, destroy the natural family, do everything to support black transgender women. That's very important to them. That's part of their manifesto. What else they want? Oh, capitalism. They want to destroy capitalism. They want to destroy this country. They're very clear about that, and the leaders now actually say, and we, first of all, though, in order to do that, we want to make sure President Trump does not get elected. That is their, that's their main, you know, short-term goal. And so I want to give you an idea of how bad this is going to be. We've seen them on the streets, in public streets in big cities, burning, looting, defacing property, statues, destroying businesses, because that's part of destroying capitalism, you understand. Small businesses like Twitter, Amazon, those companies, Facebook, they're not so much, because they're funding. They're paying, you know, the bills, among other groups. They're not destroying the ones that are supporting them, but just the mom and pop stores, the small business owners, man, they are the target because they are the enemy. It is the middle class that the Marxists always target. They are the class out of which resistance comes, because the wealthy are wealthy and they can insulate themselves from trouble. And that's what they're doing. New York City, this is a great example of that. And the poor don't have enough resources to fight. But the middle class, that's you and me for the most part, right? We have enough money to be self-sufficient and a little independent. And we are the ones who support churches, give to causes, get involved in politics, make sure people vote. We are the workhorses. We are the ones that, you know, fuel the economy and also fuel the spirit of the country. And the Russians knew that, and so did the Chinese. And so the middle class have to be destroyed. So that's you and me. Make no bones about it. And so, but of course, the rich have to be the object, because they are a more sympathetic target, aren't they? Just like Black Lives Matter is a slogan you can hide behind. You can hide behind wanting to get at the rich, those awful, terrible rich. Why do they have money and you don't? You deserve it and they don't, like Ayanna Pressley. Pay us what you owe us. I'm sure she's hurting with the salary that she's making, and probably whatever, you know, platform she had. I don't know if she's an attorney. I'm sure she's probably had some privilege, maybe some black privilege, you know, I'm thinking, in order to get to Congress. But she thinks that white people should pay her what they owe her. So Black Lives Matter protests broke out in Beverly Hills. And they made their way down the streets of residential, you know, people's homes. People's homes, that's where they were. I don't think they attacked the homes. They did destroy an American flag from a home or a private residence. But I wanted you to hear kind of what they, you know, how kind they are when they're, you know, marching in your neighborhoods. This is the sentiment they like to express. This is clip six. What was that? It was eat the rich. Eat the rich. It's a little bit like pigs in a blanket frying like bacon. That's how they chanted in opposition to the police. Black Lives Matter. And Walmart just gave them $250 million. Just keep that in mind. And so have, you know, all the big tech companies. And so is probably every major corporation that you know about. Because it's kind of extortion. And they don't dare not give. They don't dare not give. And so the money keeps flowing, and then they keep doing their destruction. And actually, some of them, I think, are doing pretty well, making out financially pretty well on protesting. By the way, George Soros is up to his ears in this, too, supporting Black Lives Matter. He did early on, and financially, too. So then that's not all they have in mind, though. They have another chant. This was a mob in Los Angeles. And this is where they tore down that American flag in a residential suburb. And I want you to hear what they had to say as they did that. This is clip seven.
No racism! No justice! No peace! No racism! No justice! No peace! No racism! No peace! No justice! No peace! No racism! No peace!
No justice, no peace. And of course, justice to them is very different than the justice that this country was founded on, which was Lady Justice, who is blind, has a blindfold on, is holding up a scale. And that was the way our judicial system was designed. Now, whether it's met it or not, no, it hasn't, of course not. But that is the goal. You know, in other countries, third world countries, like maybe Venezuela, there is no defense at all. There is no court system. It's mob justice. And, I think actually that may be what Black Lives Matter has in mind. It's their kind of justice. It's mob justice. If they say it's so, it's so. If you are, they think that perhaps you have the wrong thinking on this, and they exact their vengeance, and that's justice to them. And so one last one, because just to be clear here, they were marching through the streets, and then they made their, it's pretty sophisticated mob. They were going through another Beverly Hills neighborhood, and this is what they chanted this time. Let's listen to this one. Abolish capitalism now. It's got a real ring. Maybe somebody could write a song about that. Abolish capitalism now. Yeah, so... by the same people who are, you know, how are they making their money? Through George Soros is the biggest capitalist in the world. He's a multi-billionaire. And Walmart is not exactly, you know, a socialist company. They make a profit. And so do all these other big companies that are donating. It's just bizarre. But of course, it has nothing to do with principle other than domination and destruction. And, you know, the communists are famous for saying that it's only the struggle. So, in other words, we want to fight. It's the fight. It's the struggle. It's funny. That's what jihadists say, too. Jihad is fight. Like, we always fight. That's the goal of life, is just always struggle, struggle, create dissension, trouble, trouble, trouble. That is it. That's what we long for. That's what we live for. You know, Christians have a very different view of life. And our country has reflected the Christianity of our founding fathers, in that they wanted a place where men had the right to live in peace and to pursue happiness. I just thought of that recently in a different way. You know, we've always been sort of free to pursue happiness here, so I never thought about it. Like, what other way is there? How else could it be? And yet when you live in a country torn apart by wars, strife, killings in the street, disruptions, criminality, rapes, looting, whatever. You can't, you're not free to build your business. You're not free to take care of your families. You're trying to survive. And so you are not free to pursue happiness, which is what the founding fathers wrote as a promise of this country. The president responded to this. He said, the good and the bad. I know this is what he said. Very sad to see states allowing roving gangs of wise guys, anarchists, and looters, many of them having no idea what they're doing, indiscriminately ripping down our statues and monuments to the past. Some are great works of art, but all represent our history and heritage, both the good and the bad. It is important for us to understand and remember, even in turbulent and difficult times, and learn from them. Knowledge comes from the most unusual of places. And so that's when he issued his executive order on punishing people that were defacing public property. So thank God for President Trump and his understanding of this. And just remember, if we thought he was under attack before, he is under attack 10 times more. He cannot breathe. He cannot move without being attacked. And the voices are growing stronger and stronger. And as those of many of us that support him, you know, hover in our homes with our masks, it's the perfect. It's just perfect for them. Perfect, perfect, perfect. And that's why leftist governors and even some that are not leftist, but many people in the press, Fox has turned into one of the worst. I'm so, I can hardly stand to watch, to be honest with you. That doesn't mean everything. Their news department is so anti-Trump, it is unbelievable. And I guess it is believable because remember that Rupert Murdoch stepped aside and his sons took over and they are far on the left. And they're in charge now. So we have some remaining conservatives who support the country, love the country, and happen to support the president, and they're still prominent. And I thank God for that. Tucker Carlson did an incredible monologue just last week on what's happening in the country. Kind of Tucker's so insightful. And he talked about, explained what is actually happening on our streets and why all of this is converging and how our silence is contributing, how no one is fighting back. And how, you know, we've been duped, we've been used because we believe in following law and cooperating, thinking of others. And I know that many people who are, you know, sheltering in place, isolating, wearing masks, are thinking that they're doing that for others as well as themselves. We are sort of rule keepers, and that's a good thing, except it can be a bad thing when it isn't tempered with some kind of common sense. And so in various states around the country and really basically around the country, we're being told that the numbers are exponential over the mark in terms of infections. They call it infections. And understand that we are doing a lot more testing. My understanding is that they're even, you know, if your child goes in for, you know, sniffles or it's his regular checkup, he's being tested for COVID. And if he tests positive, then the entire family has to be tested. And that they're ramping up their testing in migrant areas and in these kind of meatpacking places and other industries like that that hire a lot of immigrants or illegal immigrants. I'm sure right now probably mostly legal because of what's happening at the border. But there's a so-called, you know, more infections there. Well, this is what happens, you know, when an infection is present, a virus is present. You think about the flu. It is a virus. Do we track everyone who has the flu and report it every single day? Do we report every single person carrying the virus? Because with viruses, you can carry it and not have it. And that seems to be the case with COVID. Many people are carrying the virus, but they don't have any symptoms. In fact, I'd say most people, the death rates are not increasing. That's actually what we have to look at. So it's a convergence of a number of things that's causing us tremendous trouble and angst. And I wish I had an easy solution, but I do believe that the truth is a huge antidote to this. And I have a lot more things to tell you. Lots of things are happening in Seattle and the CHOP zone. And also in New York City, on D.C., a journalist was attacked. It was an amazing thing. It was Jack Posobiec, who is with One America News. He was really attacked by the protesters in D.C., and maybe if we have a chance, we'll listen to a little bit of that. So stay tuned, a lot more news, and thank you so much for listening, and I'll be right back. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This so-called whistleblower is not a whistleblower. because he does not have firsthand knowledge of anything regarding President Trump. The Intelligence Community Inspector General's office, they admitted that they changed the form to allow this fake whistleblower to fill out an application.
Exposing Washington, each Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
AFR programming is now available on Alexa.
You're joking, right?
Nope, not joking.
Seriously?
Yep, this is not a drill.
Wait a minute, no way.
There's a way. The Alexa way. So if you just happen to miss your favorite shows, no worries. You can now listen to each podcast with Alexa. It's simple and it's free. Just visit afr.net/apps and click Alexa. We're not joking.
And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Acts 17:26 conveys to us the reality that we were born and placed in the 21st century by God's specific design. He determined before time where we would live and when we would live there. If you're in Minnesota, Mississippi, or Maine, God put you there on purpose. He's not surprised by the darkness we see around us, nor is he caught off guard by it. In fact, he specifically prepared for it by making sure you're alive right now. God can do whatever he wants, but he's chosen to use you and me as ambassadors of his kingdom. We are his torches to light up the darkness.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Fret not yourself because of evildoers, for they will soon fade like the grass and wither. Brian Fisher here. It's easy to get all worked up over what's going on in our culture, but that's not the way for the people of God. Those that are wreaking so much havoc today seem to have power, but they have no root in God and cannot last. My nickname for my bride is the Mother of All Living, because if it's alive, she wants to nurture it. She's planted beautiful flowers in the beds in front of our home and even puts little umbrellas over them on hot days, because she knows it doesn't take long for plants to die in the direct heat of the sun. God tells us not to be consumed with worry, because evildoers will in time be exposed to the direct intensity of God's wrath and wither away to nothing. In just a little while, the wicked will be no more. Let's claim that promise today.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The free world is about to get significantly smaller. That will be the practical effect of the enactment in the next few days of the Chinese Communist Party's hated national security law that will place Hong Kong firmly behind its totalitarian bamboo curtain. The question is, will the CCP pay any appreciable price for crushing freedom in this fashion? If not, it will surely assault liberty in Taiwan, elsewhere in East Asia, and probably far beyond. Fortunately, President Trump can simultaneously punish the Chinese communists and rectify a serious national security problem. The Pentagon says there are more than 20 People's Liberation Army companies operating here, penetrating our society and economy, stealing our technology, and bilking our investors. That's unconscionable. And as Senator Tom Cotton said yesterday, it, quote, needs to stop now, unquote. Shut them down, Mr. President, for Hong Kong and for America. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I would go back to making sure that everybody had masks, that you had PPE lined up. We have been making sure we stockpile all the things that we need that we don't have now. The one thing we do know, these masks make a gigantic difference. I would insist that everybody on public be wearing that mask. Anyone to reopen would have to make sure that they walked into a business that had masks.
You use your federal leverage to mandate that, though?
Yes.
And you would you?
Yes, I would, from an executive standpoint. Yes, I would.
So you would, in effect, mandate the wearing of masks?
I would do everything in my possible to make it required that people had to wear masks in public.
So there you go. That's Joe Biden, the Democratic candidate for president. If he's elected, he would sign an executive order to force everyone in the country to wear masks. That would make a lot of people happy, like Jay Inslee, the governor of Washington State, who has now issued a decree among other decrees, that you must wear masks. No matter what, wherever you are, you must not be seen without a mask. Actually, a sheriff out there was a little unhappy about that. And so after Inslee issued that order, and there were a lot more things to the order, the sheriff, this is clip 14, spoke up, and this is what he said to the people, and they actually were outside a church. Remember that Washington State is not just Seattle, it's a lot of rural communities. A lot of people are very conservative in Washington State. You might not know that, but it's true. There are a lot of fine people out there. And so this is Sheriff Robert Snaza talking to the people outside this church. Clip 14.
In case you guys didn't hear, Governor Inslee, in his infinite wisdom, has decided after over 100 and some odd days that we should all wear face masks inside and out. Here's what I say. Don't be a sheep.
You know, and so then across the country in Virginia, many of you are listening from Virginia, lots of you are listening from Washington State. In Virginia, over the weekend, Governor Northam wrote some really draconian rules, and we're finding out now that he is encouraging people to anonymously report businesses like grocery stores, restaurants, gun ranges, and also churches. So if you think that churches, you go into a church and they're not practicing all of his rigid orders about social distancing, about wearing masks, about whatever, you are to report. There's actually a form. You can fill it out and you can report the church. You can report the store, the grocery store. So this is what Chet Peterson, he's a Democrat from Fairfax, this is what he said. The governor is using powers that are supposed to be for an emergency, but instead he's basically passing long-lasting and semi-permanent laws that are preventing them from operating their businesses. Governor Northam is making broad-sweeping policies without any legislative approval, which violates the separation of powers between the legislative and executive branches of government. And so this is what's happening. Churches will be in trouble in Virginia. Here's the thing. Do you understand? When I say that the COVID rules, the wearing of masks and all these other restrictions are tools that the left is using to control people and to erode our rights, constitutional rights. And so you push back on me and say, yeah, but Sandy, all these people are getting infected and shouldn't we be careful? And it looks like maybe a second wave and we want to reopen schools. We want to get back to normal. So that's why we're wearing masks. The problem is we don't have any evidence. I don't care what the CDC says. Remember that Deborah Birx said herself, I don't trust half of what comes out of the CDC. Little known, unreported fact. We have the clip. If I could find it quickly, we would play it. But she did say that. And then Dr. Fauci himself, who's now wearing a mask that looks very much like a diaper to me. When I see him, he looks like he's wearing one of those cute little diapers that you buy for your babies with all the decorations on it. But this is what he said before he was wearing that diaper of a mask about masks. Let's listen, clip 21.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
You're sure of it? Because people are listening really closely to this.
Right now, people should not be walking. There's no reason to be walking around with a mask. When you're in the middle of an outbreak, wearing a mask might make people feel a little bit better, and it might even block a droplet, but it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is. And often, there are unintended consequences. People keep fiddling with the mask, and they keep touching their face.
And can you get some schmutz sort of staying inside there?
Of course. But when you think masks, you should think of healthcare providers needing them and people who are ill.
That's when Dr. Fauci actually occasionally made some sense. And so that's changed. Suddenly masks are able to prevent. I don't care what they said in the past. Suddenly masks are magically able to prevent a droplet or two from getting, here's a report. You want something more current here. This is June 16th. The coronavirus can still pass between face mask wearers, even when they're 4 feet apart, says a study. The research published by Physics of Fluids notes that face coverings alone do not prevent droplets of fluid that are projected by a cough, a discovery that researchers call alarming. And it goes on and on. But the point is, this is not like a surprise. We've known that. Masks are not, they do not prevent this. And by the way, they do cause, does it not make sense to you that if you're capturing your own saliva and mucus in by your mouth and then re-breathing, if you do have an infection, that it might not be a good thing for you personally to wear that? Now, if you're at home, if you're sick, then stay home. Don't infect people. Or maybe, you know, buy a surgical mask and wear that if you must go out. And don't go around people that are vulnerable. We still know that the elderly are more vulnerable. They're finding more infections in kids now. But again, based on what I'm reading, it's because they are aggressively testing children. And we also know the viruses mutate. They don't stay the same. But it serves a purpose, you see, to keep you frightened and keep you at home and keep the economy shut down and stop schools from opening. It serves a purpose to see the gross domestic product go down. It serves a purpose to see the stocks waver. It serves a purpose. What purpose do you think it serves? What purpose do you think this serves? And as I said, would you then support the tracking of every single person that has flu? Should we go around and feverishly test every family, every home, every business to see if anybody is infected with flu? Does anybody carry the virus of flu? Then should we all wear masks perpetually the rest of our lives because someone might catch flu from someone else? It has gotten bizarre, and yet we are embracing the bizarre. It's just, by the way, nearly half of the deaths from coronavirus in the United States have occurred in nursing homes and long-term care facilities. Only 11% of positive cases, around 282,000, have occurred at nursing homes and long-term care facilities, but about 43% of the deaths, or 54,000, have come from the same. So, only 11% of the positive cases have come from nursing home and long-term cares, but 43% of the deaths have come from long-term care because older people are more vulnerable to every infection. If you are on chemo or radiation, you're more vulnerable. You certainly know that. Your doctor tells you. And then you must be careful, but healthy people do not have to follow the same precautions of people that are vulnerable. So I feel pretty fervent about this because I think that the masks represent something much greater and much worse. You know, and I saw a couple of videos over the weekend of people going into businesses and screaming at people for having to wear masks. I'm not advocating that. If you go into a business that requires a mask, if you want to do business in there, you should wear a mask because the employees are just following their instructions. You know, you can make your case and still follow the rules. I don't think there's anything served. I don't think, you know, wearing a mask or not wearing a mask is a moral issue. And some of you wear them because you're worried about, I don't know what you're worried about, but I want you to just know what's true and what isn't. I don't think it's a sinful, you know, whatever. Obviously, there's no sin in wearing a mask if you want to wear it. But I want you to understand that there is a subjection to this. There are implications to this that are more dangerous than the mask itself. And I think we should feel free to advocate to other people that this is not what they think it is. Because who else is going to say this besides us? And could I also say that Alex Berenson is my favorite source on this. He's a former New York Times reporter. His wife is a physician in New York City. Alex is not a conservative. He was my guest when he wrote his first book on marijuana and how dangerous it actually is. And now he's written a book on the COVID-19 and the whole, he calls it pandemic porn. It's just amazing because he feels that we've been lied to and exaggerated all the issues. And I believe that that's true. People need to know that. So, so now we have Governor Cuomo, speaking of nursing homes, you know, New York had the highest death in nursing homes. And people kept saying it's because they have subways, it's because this, because they have that. Cuomo's been very defensive about it. In fact, this is what he said when he was asked, you know, well, why did you have so many nursing home deaths and why did you send COVID-positive people. Why did you make the nursing homes take people that were positive for COVID-19? This is what he said, clip three.
Do you take responsibility for that order and the role it may have played in those deaths?
Yeah, the Republicans definitely are playing politics.
These
how handling this COVID
lives.
Virus. Yes, I understand that. Yes, we had more people die in nursing homes than anywhere else because we had more people die. Because the federal government missed the boat and never told us that this virus was coming from Europe and not from China.
Whatever that means. And so, of course, he's perfectly innocent. And New York is perfectly innocent, according to the nurse that was working at the hospital, Elmhurst Hospital, that was most adversely affected. This is not nursing homes. It's a separate issue. But New York's policy in that hospital was just, if she's telling the truth, and I actually believe she is. I watched it. And, of course, now she's being demonized by the left. Isn't it interesting, those two doctors who did that press conference a few months ago talking about their perspective? They own a number of urgent cares around California, and that they felt that the truth was not being spoken by Dr. Fauci and Deborah Birx. And so they laid out what they felt was really true. Suddenly, their YouTube video is, you know, banned from YouTube. And then we have other doctors who have been banned from YouTube. So anyone who has a counter narrative is banned, you see. And so this nurse, they're after her rabidly. But she's saying that in Elmhurst Hospital, people were put on ventilators who were perfectly healthy. She said a lot of people coming into the hospital were just panicked. They were panicked, like they may have a little problem breathing, or maybe, you know, panic can cause you to be short of breath. She said there was a healthy 36-year-old man who came in. He was just fine, she said. But they would slap people on respirators. They would declare them all either COVID or they had another name for it, a suspected of COVID, something like that. And they would put them on ventilators, and then they would start on the ventilators. They start administering drugs, all kinds of drugs. And as you know, when you go into surgery and you have the anesthesiologist comes to you and talks to you about what he's going to use, and he's very careful because it can kill you if they use the wrong combination of drugs. And so her position was that people never came out when they went on the ventilators because people were careless. There was no supervision, and some people just didn't care. She said many of the people that come to Elmhurst were minorities. And she said that it seemed like they did not care. Then their families could not be there to advocate for them. So the residents and other doctors just did not care. And her position on this toward the end of this very long video is that they actually killed people through malpractice and malfeasance. You know, you think that that's kind of a wild accusation, and it is. It's a very serious one. But she had undercover video and interactions with nurses and doctors that she documented. And I think back myself to probably a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, when New York State passed their laws making abortion legal for all 9 months for any reason. Do you remember Cuomo was in on that meeting? Remember that the Planned Parenthood advocates, Faye Waddleton, who was part of the Roe versus Wade decision, how they cheered and how thrilled they were about this law that they'd passed where they could kill babies for all 9 months for any reason. What would make us think that people who view life so callously would not happily, callously send COVID-positive patients back to nursing homes to infect other older people in New York? What makes us think that they would go to extraordinary measures to save people in a hospital when the numbers were going up for COVID and that was good for them politically? That's a terrible accusation, but it sure seems like it might be possible. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.